Gateway Berlin Radio, providing quality internet podcasts for over 100 years.
From the ultra-high-tech Macquarian Studio, it's time to join the Three Worlds team as they bring you the latest global news, discuss issues of faith, and monitor the emerging Three Worlds of Christianity, while at the same time entertaining you through very immature humor. It's Gateway Berlin Radio, GBR. The world's most popular internet podcast for over 100 years. Now here's your indomitable host, Patrick Noctigon. Hello and welcome to Gateway Berlin Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Noctigal. It's good to have you with us here today on our 1,000th episode of Gateway Berlin Radio. It's hard to believe it's been 1,000 episodes, but we've been podcasting for more than 100 years on the internet. And so this is a great day of celebration for all of us. And today in the Macquarium studio, I am going to be joined by my co-host, JL Tang. You're going to be getting to know JL. She is a seminary student at the Anderson University School of Theology, and she is also our Gateway Berlin intern this summer. JL Tang, welcome to Gateway Berlin Radio. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure being here.
You do realize that you happen to be here on our 1,000th episode of Gateway Berlin Radio. I mean, that's pretty special.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It's special. Special in the Patrick Noctigal sense.
Yes. Well, thank you for throwing me in there. You know, long before you were born, my ancestors were putting together this internet podcast for people to enjoy. It's been over 100 years. It started with Spunky Jones Noctigal. That was back in like 1909. Yeah. And Spunky Jones wanted to provide a quality internet podcast that could be enjoyed all around the world. Yeah. And he was a real pioneer. Unfortunately, he died an untimely death when he was run over by a combine. But anyway, we've had a lot of great DJs over the years, all of them ancestors of mine. You may have heard of Wrong Way Noctigal. Wrong Way was the DJ of this show from 1932 to about 1946.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive. This has been a long history. I'm glad to be a part of this legacy.
That's right. It is a legacy. And Wrong Way, unfortunately, Wrong Way was a deaf mute. So during the time when he was running Gateway Berlin Radio, we refer to that as the silent ears because it was just... But, you know, the last few decades have been very good to us, and we have listeners all over the world. We're the number one show in Poland. We're the number one show in Suriname. And we are the number one show in Tobago, but not Trinidad. But hopefully pretty soon.
Okay.
Well, JL, it's so wonderful to have you here in the capital city of Berlin. What are you doing here in Germany, and how did you get here?
Well, when I first got here in May of 2010, well, I came with an urban ministry class that was here for 3 weeks doing an urban ministry experience with Anderson University. There were seven of us, six students and one professor, Reverend Dr. Marianne Hawkins. And for 3 weeks, we kind of just hung out around here, saw some of the urban ministry sites, visited with the missionaries here, and just pretty much just hung out here and just to see what the experience was going to be like living here. And after those 3 weeks were over, the students left and I stayed for my internship that was going to be here with the Berlin team this summer.
So you were hosted by our Three Worlds team members, Aaron Varner and Kelly and Rhonda Phillips. Is that correct?
That's right. And actually, I live with Kelly and Rhonda Phillips while I'm doing my internship.
Okay. And but then they took off and left you in Berlin all alone. So as we've gotten here, we've found you navigating the city just fine. What's it been like living all alone in Europe?
Well, I think it's been a little bit of an adventure. It's kind of funny just thinking about 2 months ago when I first got here. I didn't really know very much of the place, and I kind of gave Aaron a hard time for just carting us around and not telling us where we were going to and just saying, okay, we're going to go to this ministry site or that ministry site and not really telling us, well, we're stopping at this train station and then we're going to transfer to this bus. But so we just ran around like crazy following them wherever they carted us off to. So eventually when they all left to go back to the U.S. for a couple of weeks, I was left here alone. And I had fun doing this, just being here by myself, hanging out, figuring out the transport system, getting to know the neighborhood, just roaming around. Yeah, it's been a fun couple of weeks.
Actually, it's not such a big deal that you've been living over here on your own because you have been studying in the United States for quite a few years now. Is that correct?
Right. I've been living and studying in the United States for about 6 years now. And, well, a couple years in, people always ask me what were the biggest cultural shock or just differences. And I always remember my response was, well, I miss the weather in Singapore. There's nothing like sunny island weather all year round. But over the next few years, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that there were a lot more cultural differences, and not just East and West culture, but I grew up in the big city, and then I moved to a small little town. Well, the people in Anderson wouldn't tell you it's a small town, but to me, that felt like a little village. There wasn't very much to do during the weekends. It's just you go over to your friends and you hang out, watch movies. And growing up in a big city, that's just not something that I was used to.
Sometimes it is hard to, if you are from a very global environment, very global city, it can be kind of confusing to go to a place that is not that way. And I know I had that experience myself when I went off to college. So I understand that. And you are definitely a global citizen. You speak multiple languages. You've been around the world. And Singapore is a pretty global place. By the way, what languages do you speak?
Well, officially, if I need to do some kind of a registration, it would be two, English and Mandarin, or that's one of the main Chinese dialects. But I sort of understand a couple others. I understand Hokkien, which is one of the Chinese dialects that's common in Taiwan. And then I also understand Cantonese, which would be the dialect that they use in Hong Kong. And, well, since moving here, I also kind of understand a little bit of German. Not enough to really carry out a proper conversation, but enough to get by.
Now, Jamie and I are now regional coordinators here in Europe and the Middle East, which means that we will be working quite closely with our friends in the German Church of God. And they are wonderful people. They have some wonderful churches. And, of course, this country is very beautiful. And you've had the opportunity now to travel around the country a little bit during your internship and meet some of the people of the German Church of God. What's that experience been like for you? What have you been doing?
Well, I would say it's been a really good experience, really interesting and eye-opening as well, just to see a whole, not completely different, but at the same time, there are just some things that you don't see in the U.S. I spent about a day in Hanover at a church there with Ziggy and Zanner Froese and their daughter Amy, who was here in Berlin for a week helping with some translating when the urban ministry class was here. That was a small church, really great people, friendly, very engaging. Even during the service, they were very engaging. And of course, we were there, I think it was the first weekend of the World Cup, so there was a little bit of football madness going on there. And that was just a lot of fun hanging out with the people. And then about 2 weeks ago, I was in Pforzheim in South Germany with, I think it's historically a church that has a lot of Eastern European influence, a lot of people who have lived either in Germany first and then moved to the Eastern European countries and then back, or they've had some history in Eastern Europe and then moved back fairly recently. So again, that was just another very interesting church, very interesting dynamics, but very healthy congregation. Just people who love each other, love their pastor, love the people that that come to visit. And it's just a great church. And of course, being sort of a global person myself, being amongst a group of people like that with such a diverse background, that was really an interesting and really positive experience for me. And then just after I got back from Pforzheim, I spent a few days at Fritzlar, at the Bible school, the Church of God Bible School here in Germany. And that also was a really interesting experience. Got to spend a few days with the students at the Bible school, getting to know them, seeing what life was like at the Bible school, hanging out, and just being amongst the community of students who were so supportive of each other, so encouraging, and so really just like a real family feel that everyone knew everyone. Everyone knew what was going on in each other's lives, and just really there for each other to support each other as students, as pastors in training, or just there for whatever reason that they're there.
Well, JL, thank you so much for joining us on Gateway Berlin Radio. It's been wonderful to have you as our first intern here in Berlin. And we're going to keep you around for a few more shows. You're going to be my co-host, and that's wonderful. Just remind all the folks out there, what is the number one radio show, internet podcast in the entire world?
Gateway Berlin Radio.
That's right. And stick around. Coming up, we're going to have our Around the Horn news segment.
You're listening to Gateway Berlin Radio. You say potato, I say Gateway Berlin Radio.
Radio Gateway Berlin es número uno en México. Es lo máximo, vato.
Okay, we're back on GB Radio, and it's time for our Around the Horn segment. That's where we look at news stories from around the world that have maybe not been getting all the press that they should be getting. So sometimes these stories will be kind of silly, sometimes they'll be pretty important. But we begin with the stock market in India. As you know, JL, countries all over the world are starting up stock markets, and there's a stock market in Egypt now. There's a stock market in Kenya. Have you invested in the Kenyan stock market?
Not recently.
Okay, well, you can do that if you wanted to. Well, I think you probably have to be Kenyan, but now, apparently, in India, it will be possible to invest in the stock market if you are a Hindu god. That's right, Hindu gods may be having access to the stock market. Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I'm sure it would be a good thing.
Yeah, maybe they'd do pretty well since, you know, they're gods. But let's see here. It says that in India, people have what is called a Demat account, which are shares that you can hold electronically instead of having a certificate. So in these kinds of investment shares, they are now considering opening up the opportunity for gods, Hindu gods, to actually own shares. So it looks like the trust, the firm that's offering this is the Ganpati Panchayatam Santasan firm, investment firm. And the gods that they're looking at include Lord Ganesh. Now, in Singapore, did you ever go and see the Hindu temples that are there?
A little bit.
Okay, do you remember ever seeing kind of a blue elephant?
No, not really.
Okay, because Lord Ganesh is a god who looks like an elephant. Has a nose, elephant nose, and multiple arms. And even in Singapore, the temples there will often have Lord Ganesh. So apparently, he will now be able to enter into the stock market. But I guess I would wonder, what kind of investment firm, do you really trust an investment firm that is allowing Hindu deities to make purchases? What would you say to that?
I don't see why not. I mean, well, then my question would be, would it still be okay for me to pray to that god for my fortune to be changed? I mean, now that the god has a personal stake in the stock market, will the god be biased then?
You raise a good point. What about the possibility of insider trading? That's right. If the god knows everything about everything, then he would kind of know when the stock will go up and when it'll go down. Is that really fair? Perhaps it's not. Well, we'll leave it at that. Let's look at our next news story. Okay, the next story is about North Korea and the World Cup. JL, I know you were watching the World Cup. Who are you cheering for?
Oh, South Korea, definitely. But, well, they got taken out.
Yeah, they didn't perform as well as they have in other World Cups. It wasn't a good cup for them. You know who else it wasn't a good World Cup for was the North Korean team. They weren't expected to do well, but they surprised everyone when they went with Brazil the whole game, and it ended up only being a 1-0 victory for Brazil. That was quite surprising. But then, unfortunately, they got absolutely demolished by Portugal 7-0. Did you watch that game?
Unfortunately, I didn't, but I heard all about it. Everyone in Germany was talking about it.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive show by Portugal. Well, now there are reports about why that may have happened, and I'm reading here. According to a certain source, the RFA reported that after watching the match against Brazil, in which North Korea lost, it was 1-2, Kim Jong-il, of course, that's the leader of North Korea, said that although the team played the first half well, it lost because it only focused on defense in the second half. Kim Jong-il then gave orders for the team's defenders to be positioned forward and even specified where each defender should be standing on the field. Apparently, Kim gave orders twice to a responsible official dispatched to South Africa during the game. And the orders were delivered to the manager, and then they did what he said, which may have led to them losing so badly. They were getting messages directly from Kim Jong-il. That would kind of explain the big loss, wouldn't it, JL?
Well, I probably don't want to comment on this because I don't know who's going to hear this, and I don't want to get into trouble with Kim Jong-il.
That's a good point. He's kind of a scary guy. So apparently he's giving secret messages to the North Korean football team. It would be nice if he would receive messages from a hairstylist because that bird's nest hairdo that he has is absolutely frightening. So maybe he's the one that should be getting the messages, don't you think, JL?
Oh, definitely.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Now, JL, are you on Facebook? Pretty much everybody in your generation is. Are you on Facebook?
Yeah, definitely. That's the only way I can keep up with people around the world.
Okay, do you have many Islamic militants that find you on Facebook?
I probably shouldn't tell you.
Okay, that probably would be a good idea. Well, if you are an Islamic militant, you might be in luck because there is a new version of Facebook that's being created. It's not Facebook, but it's similar. It's called Ikhwan Book. And Ikhwan Book is from the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. For those of you that don't know, the Muslim Brotherhood is a very powerful party in Egypt. And they are pretty militant Islamic. And they're not big fans of the Mubarak regime in Egypt. So anyway, in order to communicate better, they are starting their own version of Facebook, and that's what Ikhwan Book is. Now, apparently they already have Ikhwan Wiki, like Wikipedia. They have Ikhwan Wiki, Ikhwan Google, and Ikhwan Tube. Ikhwan Tube. Probably not too many non-veiled women on that site, do you think?
Probably not.
Yeah, right. Okay, so for those of you that are in the Muslim Brotherhood that are listening to this podcast, you may want to check out Ikhwan Book. I think you'll really enjoy it. And news coming out of Iran. Now, have you been following the situation in Iran lately with the Green Revolution?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. They're having a people revolution there, but the government is very good at preventing the people from really taking over. So, but apparently these kinds of revolutions in Iran can often take years to play out. So just because they have not won the revolution or overthrown the government thus far does not mean that that day is not coming. But here's the news out of Iran. Apparently, the Iranian government is now going to be deciding what kinds of haircuts people can have. They don't like multicolored mohawks. They don't like rock star-inspired ponytails. And they especially don't like unkempt mullets. So they are coming up with a list of hairstyles that are allowed and you're getting a lot of trouble if you're wearing the wrong hairstyle. Now, do they do that in Singapore? I know Singapore is a very regulated society.
Well, in schools, yeah, but not elsewhere. But what I'm wondering, well, hold that for a second. In the military, they do, but that's in the military. Mm. But what I'm wondering about in Iran, are they going to do that the same thing for facial hair?
Well, I did read that the Elvis look is still going to be allowed. So, you know, maybe that includes the big lamb chop sideburns and stuff. That may be okay. What I do like about what the evil government in Iran is doing is they are outlawing mullets, which I think can never be a bad thing. So there'd be a lot of people in the Midwest that would have a problem with that one. But, hey, they got one right. All right, and our next news story is out of Africa. Now, this World Cup was special because it was held in Africa. And one of the things that people thought would happen is that they thought that the African teams would do very, very well. But they turned out to not do as well as people had expected. And one of those disappointing teams was Nigeria. The Super Eagles of Nigeria usually do very well. This year, they did so badly that the president is going to punish them. The president of Nigeria is called Goodluck Jonathan. That's an interesting name, isn't it? Goodluck Jonathan. And President Jonathan has said that the reason that the team did badly is because it is run by a corrupt organization. It is not run well. Its players are too old because the training systems are too dilapidated to recruit young talent. And all of this is part of the president's effort to clamp down on corruption in Nigeria. Now, have you ever received any email, JL, from Nigeria?
Well, I have friends in Nigeria.
Okay, but have you ever received one of those emails that tells you that there's a bank account, there's $1 million or something, and they want you to hold it, and they just need your information?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, those come out of Nigeria. They specialize in making those, and it's a huge industry in Nigeria. It's probably run by your friends. And apparently Nigeria has some severe problems with corruption and criminality. And so the president is trying to highlight his attack against corruption by going after the soccer team, which he thinks is corrupt as well. But listen to what they said, what the Sahara reporters are saying about the president. And I'm quoting here from the Sahara reporters. They say, "The shocking part of the decision is that the person making this decision is the president. This is the same president who brought 140 people to Canada for a needless jamboree only a few days ago. A president who is presiding over an oil-producing country that is wallowing in darkness. A president who does not have the courage to arrest and prosecute his friends and political godfathers who have been indicted for accepting bribes from Halliburton and Siemens. A president who is presiding over a country in which the National Assembly, dominated by members of his party, are basically looting the treasury through dubious constituency allowances. In light of his failures, will the president withdraw himself from office for 2 years, as he has done to the Super Eagles? If there's a World Cup for good governance, would Goodluck Jonathan make the 10th 11? Your guess is as good as mine." That's pretty harsh, don't you think, JL?
Definitely, but it makes me wonder what Kim Jong-il might have a response to that.
That's a good point. That's a good point, JL. Very clever thinking. And our last news story in our Around the Horn segment is a serious one. The Vatican is about to issue a long-awaited sex abuse document. And this document that's coming out of the Vatican is going to be basically instructions about and laws about what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And as we know, Europe has been hit particularly hard by the Catholic sex scandals. Germany, Ireland, England, and I think Switzerland have all been uncovering wave and waves of abuses that have been done by priests on innocent victims. And so as part of this new law or this new document that's coming out, they're going to be articulating very specifically the crimes, what constitutes a crime for people in the priesthood. And for the first time ever, it's going to include downloading child pornography from the internet. But this story is an important one because, as I was just saying, Europe, which already has a lot of cynicism about religion, is now seeing how there's been all this systematic abuse in the churches of these countries. And this only adds more to the challenge of presenting Christianity in the European context. Have you kind of noticed that secular feeling and that religious skepticism in your time here, JL?
Yeah, I was actually just thinking about that this morning, that I also have realized how little Christian vocab I've been using in my day-to-day life here, just because of the people I've come into interaction with. So definitely, it feels a lot more secular and the people that I've interacted with, they know I'm a theology student, so they would definitely be interested in talking to me about theology, but not so much about faith or church or ministry. Just talking about it more than about the faith aspects itself.
I think it's important to monitor what happens here, because the response to this is, it has an impact not just on Catholics, but it has an impact on Protestants and evangelicals, and basically anyone affiliated with Christianity is going to experience some of the fallout from what happened in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, in fact, some of my friends were just telling me that they were encouraged to go to visit a Catholic church just because of all that's going on here, just to see what is going on for themselves, to get a first-hand experience of what is going on rather than to hear about what's going on in the news. And I think that's definitely important, that sometimes some things may be happening in some churches, but not all. So it would be helpful for students, for people of the Christian faith, to actually investigate what's going on rather than hearing that, well, one church is doing this, and then we think that it's bad, and then we should all, and that Christianity in general becomes bad because of one church.
That's right. We can't make generalizations. Well, JL, thank you for joining us on the In the Horn segment, and we'll be back with our in-depth segment in just a couple of moments.
May the force be with you, and Gateway Berlin Radio too.
In our in-depth segment today on GBR, we are looking at an article that was written for the New York Times on the, I think it was the 8th of July, in the Americas section. And the article is about a Catholic church in Mexico City that is reaching out to glue-sniffing teenagers and gang members. And of course, in Latin America, there is a huge problem with children sniffing glue, and a lot of times this is done to curb their hunger pains. And there's a Catholic church in Mexico City that is trying some pretty unorthodox methods of reaching these young people. It's the San Hipólito Church. Is the name of the church that's where this is happening. And there is a man there, there's a priest, and a man named Frederick Luz, who the article talks about, who is 74 years old. He's an American who's lived in Mexico for more than four decades. And the way he reaches the young people is very unusual. JL, can you tell us what he does?
Well, he uses their language. He speaks like them. He talks like them. And he basically just preaches from the pulpit like they would speak on the streets.
That's right. I think I heard that Mexican Spanish has more slang than any language in the world, I think. And I know that Mexican Spanish has all sorts of words that we don't use in other places, in Costa Rica or other places. One of the unusual things about Mr. Luz is that he actually does use swear words when he's speaking to the young people in the church. So he actually speaks literally their language, and you can hear him cussing. So here's the 74-year-old man in a Catholic cathedral, up at the front of the church, what we would call the pulpit, and he is using foul language. What do you think, JL?
I'm just curious to see how the church would respond. I mean, the article talks a little bit about how some of the church members are responding.
Yeah, I mean, some have been quite upset, but they have found that a lot of young people do come to the church, and they do feel that that they're getting spoken to. They do not allow drugs in the church. The article makes it clear that they make sure that nobody comes in with any drugs inside. So, and of course, the language that the priests use, it's not just cussing for the fun of it. He's talking about repentance and leaving their sins, but when he talks about the bad things in their life, the evil they've done, he might use a stronger Spanish word, a curse word about the evil they've done. But I think this article was interesting for me because here at threeworlds.com, we are trying to look at the way that Christianity is changing. And we're looking at the traditional church. Of course, the Catholic Church has been very traditional. The post-Christendom church, which is the church trying to reach places like Berlin, very secular, very hostile to institutional Christianity. And then the non-Western Christianity, which is exploding in places like China and Brazil. But what's happening is that more and more traditional settings are finding that they are having to do something out of the ordinary. So this story highlights that. It's such a good example of that because here you have it's a Catholic church, not even Protestants. Protestants are more likely to be experimental, but this is a Catholic church in the capital city that's allowing this guy to use foul language in an effort to communicate. And so the bigger point we're looking at here today on GBR is the idea that the church is having to change somewhat and experiment. Maybe they go too far sometimes. Maybe they don't go far enough. Maybe they find it just right. But the broader point is that old things have not been working. The old things have not been getting the glue-sniffing kids to the church. This is starting to work. Have you seen that in your own experience, JL, the church wrestling with what kind of shape it needs to take?
Yeah, definitely. I've heard of churches in Indianapolis who have started doing things differently. They've taken church services to the bars, hang out with people in the bars, and have the services in the bars. I'm not too sure exactly what regulations they have when they do a service like that. But also, some of us might be familiar with Kurt Soliano's street ministry in Atlanta, Georgia, where they just take the church to the streets for the homeless people in Atlanta. But also right here in Berlin, there's a cafe that ministers to prostitutes. It's not too far from where Kelly and Rhonda Phillips and Aaron Barnard live. And basically, they just serve coffee and tea. It's a small little place, and the women who work on the streets can just come in and hang out. If it's a cold day, they have hot coffee and hot tea, and then sometimes when it's a warmer day, they have iced tea. And the women who work at the cafe or who help run the cafe, most of them are volunteers, and they go with there's an organization in Berlin that is specializing in ministries like that. They I'm not 100% sure, but I think they are run by several churches who have this same passion for ministries like that. They kind of cooperate together to do ministries that are similar to this. And the cafe is one of the ministries that is I don't know if it's directly run by the bigger organization or it's indirectly involved in some ways or it's helped in some ways. But that's what they do. They just have a cafe where women can come in and sit, take a break from the day, and or come in. There's a social worker there on certain days, and they know when the social worker is there, and they can come in and talk to the social worker. Or otherwise, they just come in and then they sit and chat with the volunteers, and that's all. That's all really all they do. Eventually, if the gospel message comes up, then yes, that becomes an opportunity to share. But really, it's just
mostly it's just a safe place for the women to be.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the issue of approach here in the Catholic Church. In this particular Catholic Church in Mexico City, they are taking a very different approach than you're talking about this place here in Berlin that ministers to prostitutes. And in a place like that, the approach is not to preach, right? You don't go in there and lay down the laws of God or talk about what they're doing wrong in their life. Am I correct?
Right, exactly. And some of these women tell us of some of the other ministries who have been involved in the cafe kind of fell out with it because the people who are running the cafe now believe that if you preach, these women are not going to hear you because some of them are trafficked. I mean, all kinds of different stories and different reasons why they're doing what they're doing. But the whole point is preaching doesn't really work anymore. And so we just have to come up with something different.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing your story about your experience here in Berlin. And that's the kind of things that we're going to be looking at a lot at 3worlds.com. We're going to be looking at what the traditional church is still doing, what non-traditional methods are, what non-Western methods are, and try to broaden the scope of what Christianity looks like at the beginning of the 21st century. So thanks, JL, for joining me on this in-depth segment on this, our 1,000th episode of GBR Radio.
You're listening to Gateway Berlin Radio. Fuel injected and 0 to 60 in 4 seconds.
Okay, JL, what are we going to do now?
Well, I'd like to take you and Jamie and Marco to the Turkish market, if that's okay.
Okay, let's go.
Probieren.
Yes. It's sweet.
Hadi bakalım burada işte gördünüz işte bak ay yıldız işte bak bak.
So JL, where are we?
We are at the Turkish market in Berlin.
Quite a bit of Turkish people here, aren't there?
Oh yeah, there's, well, not just Turkish, there's a lot of other different people as well.
Is this your first time?
Here? No, not my first time. I like coming here, it's one of my favorite places when it's open. The sights, the smell, so everything.
The smell of fresh produce is everywhere here, and you can buy all sorts of fruits and vegetables, as well as meats and shoes and shirts and dresses. Most of the stalls are obviously operated by people of Turkish descent. I'm here with JL and Jamie and Marco. And I've already lost them, so I'm wandering around the market completely hapless. I have not a single clue where they are. They're probably wondering where I'm at. They're probably super happy that I'm not with them right now. And they're probably having the time of their lives. So as they go on walking without me, probably annoyed that I somehow got myself lost, I am just wandering past the socks right now, which are apparently on sale for €1. Let me think about that.
since I don't usually eat my vegetables that much, I'm not real good at describing the vegetables that are here in the Turkish market, but I'll go ahead and make a try. It looks like right here in front of me are this strange thing called a watermelon. Here's some clementines. There's some strawberries, cherries, very ripe tomatoes, something that's either a zucchini or, well, it's one of those long green things. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. It's kind of long and green and green and long. There's one of those. Then there's some lemon, some onions, and this looks like it's that thing that looks like a brain. Is that cauliflower? I don't even know, and I don't really care. All right, let's get out of the vegetable section. And now we are in the clothes section. This is mainly girls, small girls wear. And it's probably been 10 or 15 minutes. I still have no idea where my wife and child and JL are. They're long gone. They should be easy to find. They're the only ones not wearing a head covering, but somehow I can't manage to find them in this crowd. Oh, well, let's walk past the bananas now. Flower section. I don't know anything about flowers, so once again, my descriptions will be a bit vague. Okay, there's this one that's kind of purple, and then there's some that are kind of bright red, which are kind of rose-like. Oh, it says Garten Rose. So, okay, all right, it's a rose. Then there's some others that are kind of green with assorted colors. Okay, let's go to the next section. That was great. Scarves. More produce, and there's really hardly anything in this market that I would really be able to describe to the folks back home. So here I am in the Turkish market. I'm still lost, and I'm next to the brasiers. Now, you may wonder why on earth... you may wonder why I have not called my family. That's because we don't have cell phone service yet, so I'm still wandering around. And the one thing they haven't had is drinks. But alas, I found my first drink stand. Thank heavens, because it's 95 degrees here. They're having a heat wave in Berlin, and I'm incredibly thirsty. Okay, a half hour later, as I pass the fresh fish, I locate my wife and son. Now let's see how glad they are to have me back. Let's see how exciting it is for them to know that I'm safe, that no one hurt me, that I did not get lost in the Turkish market forever. Let's have the great reunification moment right now here in Berlin. Hi. So I guess I got lost.
I guess you did.
Did you guys miss me at all?
No.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought. Did you miss me, Marco?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it from the Turkish market. You have been listening to Gateway Berlin Radio. Join us next time for more global news and idiocy. Look for us at 3worlds.com. That's the word 3-worlds.com. Check out our diary, our latest photos, and of course, the latest editions of GBR Gateway Berlin Radio. We'd love to get your feedback if it's positive and nice. Contact us from 3worlds.com. For the whole 3worlds team, this is Patrick Noctegal signing off. See you next time on GBR, Gateway Berlin Radio.